Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and somebody has got something playing in the background. Please, please shut it down. We're getting terrible feedback on it, whether it's the computer or whatever it is. Okay, there we go. Thank you so much. Again, I'm Marty Oakley, the PPJ Gazette Online. This is the TS Radio Network, and this show tonight is Whistleblowers, and it's the USDA Hour. The show is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, taking place July 28th through 31st this year in Washington, D.C. And, of course, we're making other plans for that because of this faked-up virus crap. But we're still going to carry on. My co-host tonight is Lawrence Lucas. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
Oh, you bet. It's been a while since we've been on. Lawrence, I'm going to let you take this. These are basically, we've got Tom Devine. I don't have Matthew Fogg just yet, but Tom Devine is on. And then Marcel Reed's going to come in about the summit. And but Tom is going to be giving you a little primer on this police reform bill. And then he'll be on with me Monday evening on a whistleblower show, and we will go into this in depth. So go ahead, Lawrence.
Okay, well, thank you, Marty, for having this wonderful show, and thank you for getting back online after moving from Minnesota to Georgia. So we hope that we'll get additional people from that area listening in. We do have, fortunately, we have Marcel Reed on tonight. She'll come on first and tell us and update us about the upcoming Whistleblower Conference. And July, and we, like you mentioned, we are looking for Matthew Fogg, who will be talking about the Marshal Service and this new crime bill and how that is going to impact our nation and people like whistleblowers that we work so diligently with. And we have Tom Devine, and Tom, thank you for being available tonight to share with our listening public about what is really going on with this bill and what's the difference between the Senate version and the House version. And without further ado, and I know we have Lisa Donnelly, our Vice President of the Coalition of Minority Employees, Shannon Reed, and we expect others to join us, Denise Rice. And so we are looking to have a pretty exciting show. So, Shannon and all the ladies from California and Lisa, welcome to the show. And we're going to get first started with Marcel Reed from the Whistleblower Organization that is formed many years ago. And she has done, along with Michael McCray, a wonderful job in getting the whistleblower issue and kept it before the Congress and kept it before the media. And she has been a tremendous support to this show and all the things around whistleblowers and the suffering and pain that this culture that exists in our federal government and in this country has allowed to take place. So, Marcel, can we have you on first, please?
Thank you, Lawrence. Hello, everyone. I know everyone on this call personally, so I can tell you that the audience is in for a treat. You're going to speak to people who normally support the summit year in and year out. Actually, two people on the line tonight, Tom Devine and Matthew Fogg, will write about Matthew Fogg and Lawrence Lucas were all there with at the very beginning of this when Michael and I started to do these summits. These were the people that we turned to, and these were the people that supported us. And I'm deeply appreciative of that. And the summit is due to all of the work that all of us has done through the years. So we have gone now from being a in-person summit that was 3 or 4 days long to now we're going virtual. So it's been a steady progression with the summit. So the summit did the first whistleblower TEDx salon back in 2016. It was the first of its kind, and Tom Devine there, and we had a number of
Marcel, hold up just a second. Someone, we're getting tremendous amount of background noise. We can hear everything all of you do, rustling of papers, everything. Please either mute up while you're not speaking or stop what you're doing, whatever it is. Please. Go ahead, Marcel. I'm sorry.
No problem. So I just wanted to say that the summit has grown, and it's grown because of the efforts of the people that are online now. And this year, because of COVID, we will be doing a virtual summit. And that virtual summit will also introduce the start of a new pillar called the Shaw Marvin Pillar. It is going to be awarded to members of the military, whether active duty or veterans. We're trying to encourage people in the service to report waste, fraud, and we think that a way to do that is to acknowledge them publicly. It will be the first pillar dedicated to members of the service, and I hope it is a success. I hope you will tell people that you know about it, and we're looking for anyone to nominate someone for the pillar as long as they have reported waste, fraud, and abuse while in the military or working for a DOD contractor. The summit this year will be virtual. I don't think it's a secret anymore, so I will tell it here. We're actually going to be online for several days, and we're going to provide people with an opportunity not just to see us in a live stream, the panels in a live stream, but people will be able to go back and pick up various programs or people that they want to listen to again and view it. And we believe that the platform is going to be on Roku. So you'll be able to go to Roku or Apple and simply pull the channel up, and you'll have access to the summit. It gives us much further reach. It's an opportunity for people to see the summit, and it's an opportunity for people to revisit panels that have been presented and to reach a wider audience, because that's always been my mission, to make more people aware of whistleblowing, what it does, and how it works. And we've always been, since we have started the summit, always leaning forward into the current abuses. Right now, we're focusing on what's going on in our normal summit, USDA and guardianship. But this year, we're really going to spend some time and energy and effort talking about how we can help through whistleblowing to restructure, hopefully, some of what we see in law enforcement. So I invite everyone to attend. We will go live on the 30th. I know we will be up for days, and it will be a mix of both films, because now we are also a film festival, so we will have films, there will be panels, there will be pillar presentations, and it will be an opportunity for people all over the country who can't attend in person to attend virtually. Thank you for your time. Oh, and go to our website, whistleblowersummit.com, for more information about this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marcel. Thank you very much. Okay, Tom, you're next. We would like for you to get started. Hopefully, Matthew Falk, has he connected with the station as yet?
No.
Okay, if Matthew's not here, we're going to move ahead, and that'll give Tom a little more time to get into some of the detail about what he's been doing for years and creating this environment for whistleblowers. And starting the organization has become very well known throughout the country, especially amongst the whistleblower community. And the one thing I can say for Tom, he understood how the abuse extends not only in terms of the retaliation and harassment and the firing of whistleblowers, but also he understood the connection that this had with civil and human rights. So, Tom, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, and thank you for all the work that you have done and all the work that you continue to do in working together for civil and human rights and whistleblowers in this country. So, Tom, you have the mic. Tom?
Well, thank you very much for having me on the program, and the respect and admiration is absolutely mutual. I feel working with folks like you and Marcel, it's with kindred spirits, and actually kindred spirits are a little more experienced than me. But on whistleblower rights, I'm pretty experienced, and the U.S. has 60, on the federal level, we've got 60 whistleblower laws protecting people throughout the economy. But not police officers, and we need them for this police, any of these police reform bills to be genuine. And the House bill is very impressive controls on police abuses. The Senate bill is more like a data collection thing. Doesn't weaken the legal barriers for police liability when they murder, abuse people's rights. It doesn't control their behavior, but neither of these bills necessarily are going to be credible or have an impact as far as either of them goes unless they have whistleblower protection. The new rights are going to be a mirage without whistleblower protection because you just can't always enforce freedoms, defend freedoms effectively through a smartphone. Smartphones are great, and they caused a national day of reckoning. But there's going to be a lot of times when there's nobody with a smartphone there to make a video. And whether or not these reforms are respected in reality will depend on testimony from honest police officers who challenge police illegality. And that's very difficult to do right now. It's a deeply ingrained culture, the blue wall of silence. And for police officers, they consider like blowing the whistle is like committing the truth. They're treated like they committed a crime. They risk their own lives can be in danger, being deserted on stakeouts or firefights if they blow the whistle on police illegality. And that happened with Matthew Falk, who I see is getting on the line now, and he'll be able to share his story. But, you know, if we don't have testimony, these rights are going to be false advertising. Going to take testimony from police to make these new safeguards like the ban on chokeholds, controls on other deadly force, expanded liability, restrictions on no-knock warrants, accurate data collection so we can track police who are wrongdoers. None of that's going to be anything to take seriously unless people can safely testify to defend those new rights. And it's just not realistic to expect police officers to defend the public if they can't defend themselves when they defend the rule of law.
Well, my own thoughts on that, Tom, I agree with you. It's a hazardous job. But what has happened since 2003 when they passed 2001, the Patriot Act, and then the taking and bringing in of law enforcement under Homeland Security and militarizing them, you know, it was a recipe for disaster. You cannot take in my opinion, now this is just my opinion, but you can't take people like this and give them military weapons and not expect them to go crazy and use them. And this is what we've seen. They bring out tanks, grenade launchers, all kinds of stuff to use on the public, sound weapons. This shouldn't be happening in this killing. To me, these are execution. Again, my opinion, executions in the street, no judge, jury, no citing of a crime, no nothing. They said, and this goes on all over the country. It goes on every day. More people have been shot dead by police that never saw a courtroom than these gun, you know, deaths that they claim because they're terrible because we own guns. They're killing more people than the public is. To me, this needs to be ratcheted down. They went from being peace officers to law enforcement. Every police or, you know, law enforcement vehicle in the country had the words "to protect and serve" removed. And now, according to the Supreme Court, they are not responsible for keeping you safe. Even if you're in custody, they have only limited responsibility to keep you safe in custody. So to me, this system has gone terribly wrong. These used to be the heroes of our community. You know, every little boy wanted to grow up and be a police officer. And now people are terrified of them. That has to change. That has to change. We need our heroes back.
Well, one of our heroes is female, but he's on the line if we can get his sound. Matthew Fogg has risked his life to challenge racism in law enforcement.
Yes.
And,
can you give me the first three numbers of his... can you give me the first three numbers of his... Like his area code, so I can pull him off?
Oh, boy. I don't have his phone number.
Okay.
But he just sent an email. Matthew, maybe you can send an email with your phone number.
Here, I'm going to try this one, 703, and see if that works.
No.
Okay.
No.
Martin,
okay. He's on 240.
Okay. 240.
Yeah, I'm here.
Matthew?
Now. You guys can hear me, right?
There
yeah,
you go.
That's me.
There we go.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, I've been yelling and hollering that y'all couldn't hear me, man. I was screaming, "Hey, I'm here."
Yeah, that number one.
But yeah.
But
I've been listening to everything you've been saying, and it's, you know, it just covers a myriad of things. But me having 30 years of being in law enforcement, so I came in 1978, so, you know, I came on when I saw the changes. But the whole thing that me ratcheted up this whole issue of policing that really turned south on us was that whole mantra of war on drugs. When under the Clinton administration, when they ratcheted up the, I think, 100,000 police officers, something like that, on the streets or whatever, and they just started saying, they made it instead of, as you say, community policing, it became combat patrol. It was like, you know, you're in the Vietnam War or something, you're on patrol. And then they certainly centered it. I'm hearing feedback from that troop. Are you guys even hearing me?
Somebody please shut down whatever you've got going there. If you're on speakerphone,
right,
get off. Go ahead. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, you were getting the feedback. But anyway, so what happened was when I came out of CAD, and I always remember this, and this is one of the key things to it all, I said, in the academy, they teach you all the right ways to do everything. You really do. You learn all of the proper shooting, probable cause, everything you need to do to make arrests, how to police communities and all that. But what happened when you get to your duty station, these cultures were already in place. Because in a command and control environment, when you're talking about law enforcement, it's like the military, the command and control environment. If the head is bad or a supervisor or somebody's off, if you want to get promoted, you want to move up the chain, you got to please these folks. So first thing my supervisor told me when I got to the duty station was, "Hey, Fogg, I know you guys learned all that great stuff in the academy." He said, "But let that stuff go. This is how we do it here." And at that point, at that moment, I saw the culture of indifference. And then what happens is when you're in that culture, and you decide, man, this isn't right. What we're doing here, what these guys are doing, it's wrong here. The chokeholds and the beating and all of the little nuances of things they say, like if you run, we're going to beat you behind no matter what if you run. Or we're going to take the law in our own hands. We think you did so. They're going to plant drugs on you. If they think you are a bad actor, they're going to – everything on that culture, you do it yourself. And then what happens if you're one of those guys that say, look, I'm going to speak out against this. Now the whole institution turns on you. You become the rat. I mean, this is like – I tell people all the time, law enforcement became like organized crime. I mean, what could be more organized than that when you got – people wearing badges and guns, they go away from the training and everything we had, and they begin to do everything the way they want. We were never trained to put knees on necks and choke hold people until they die and all of this crazy stuff. We weren't trained that way. But what happens, that's a culture that developed on the street, shooting people in the back and when somebody just moves. I think you mentioned, Marty, when we were talking about the combat type of stuff, the gear and everything. Our training, when you go to what's called a SWAT training, and I went through the SWAT school training and everything, all of this training does make you, though, it makes you want to get out there and have combat action. You want something to happen. You got these handcuffs, you got this gun, you want to go do it somewhere. So what white America said, or what the Constitution, or what I guess what we might say Congress them allowed us to do, was say, okay, you can act out all of your war on drugs in black neighborhoods and low-income neighborhoods, minority neighborhoods. You can't go into those white neighborhoods doing the same thing. So what happened was that's where we begin to see this sort of influx of, you know, when I worked with DEA and special operations and all of that, I asked the question one day, don't they use drugs in these more affluent neighborhoods? And they had the best stuff, and we know they did. But my supervisor told me, he said, Foggy, we go over there, we start locking those folks up. They know judges, lawyers, politicians. Said, we're not going to – they're not going to stand for that. They're going to shut it down. So let's just go to the weakest link and get our numbers up. So then that's when it became sort of ethnic cleansing. You started. Everything was a focusing on the minority areas. Law enforcement went in that direction. Now, speaking of our whistleblowers, Tom has done a great job of whistleblowing and getting this, you know, the information out there and letting people understand, and even with Congress right now with these bills in Congress, he's right. If you don't get law enforcement officers real meaningful whistleblower protection, and I compare it, it's just like the United States attorneys and the DAs could not adjudicate crimes if they didn't have witnesses. We all understand how the witness system works. You got to have somebody there to be able to come forward and give you the information against the reference group. The problem was nobody did that for law enforcement. I used to be in the witness protection program for the marshal. I mean, I used to, you know, be a member, you know, the law enforcement side of it, helping people who were witnesses. And the same thing that I saw that they needed, we needed, if we blew the whistle behind that blue ball of silence, we needed the same thing. Matter of fact, we needed it more because the people we were working with, we knew they had guns. So bottom line is, when you blow that whistle, and I can name many guys. One of my black partners out of New York, all three of us, and white guy, Steve Zanowick, we all filed complaints at the same time. The New York Post did a front page story on us in 1997, said bigots with badges, you know, and talked all about all of the discrimination. What happened to all three of us? We went up on Capitol Hill and we testified before the Congressional Black Caucus. Steve Zanowick pulls up a big black rubber rat that was given to him by a supervisor because he went and reported how they were mistreating his black partner, the other white marshal. So what happens? The guy that gave Steve the rat, he gets promoted to head our national, not just the localized New York office where they're from. He was promoted to head our national internal affairs division, the guy that gave Steve the rat. Okay? Then Steve gets forced off the job. Guy puts a gun to his chest. All kinds of stuff happening. The other guy, Bill Scott. Bill winds up, somebody runs his car off the road and he breaks his neck and he dies from those injuries. Me, they leave me on a stakeout over in Baltimore. The white guys rolled out at the time we were taking down one of America's most wanted. These guys were heavily armed and I'm wrestling this guy with a gun in his pocket. Why these guys who had left deserted me. Went back to headquarters, sitting over in Washington, D.C., while I'm over in Baltimore, wrestling a dangerous fugitive, and they're telling the boss I'm on a wild goose chase and I don't know what I'm doing. And then instead of him, after we make the arrest, instead of him charging these guys, he says, Paul, can you let bygones be bygones? So this is the world that you're in. If you don't get protection to blow that whistle, and I've had a lot of officers tell me, they say all across the country, I work with New York, Chicago, L.A., Miami, and all of the officers tell me the same thing. They say, folks, I got my family got to feed. I'm relying on this income. This is my livelihood. If I blow that whistle, you know, everything is going to go south. And we understand that. We know that. And I had a reporter that asked me way back years ago. She said, well, Mr. Fogg, CBS, I'm at a CBS interview. She says, if you knew they were going to retaliate, then why did you say anything? And I had not looked at it. And I said, because I'm not a second-class citizen. She said, oh, good answer. But the reality of it was, that's what you hear. If you know they're going to retaliate, then you keep your mouth shut. So if we don't get meaningful whistleblower protection for law enforcement officers, as Tom was saying, and laying out all of these different things, the cops are the ones who can come forward and let the public know, yes, this stuff exists. It's real. I've seen it with my own eyes. But you can't, don't come after me because now I'm opening my mouth. So this is the time in the country, I believe, for it to happen. It seems like we got this critical mass of movement in the country where people are saying we want to see a major change in law enforcement, see this paradigm shift. It's time for it, and I think this is where we got to push to get these meaningful whistleblower laws, and that's the part that they leave out in Congress because I think people up there understand. And if you don't know law enforcement, I tell people this all the time. You look at what happened with Mayor de Blasio in New York City. That time when he went and told his black sons, he had two black sons, and he says, listen, just be careful when y'all go out there and do what the police tell you to do and all that. Now, why do you have to tell black men to do something different than you would tell a white person to do something? The fact that he told his sons that and it got out to the public and got out to the police unions, who are very powerful, they got upset. And so what happened? They turned their back on their commander-in-chief. So that tells you how powerful, and they sent a message to that mayor real quick. You want to play this game, you know, you know, tell them where you might find your sons at. If you want to play this game, you better back down off of us. And if you notice, all he changed, he backed down real quick because them officers turned their back on him. And you can't, you know, military command, sort of what we call paramilitary type organization, you can't be doing.
Well, we lost him. Lawrence?
Yeah, it seems as though we did lose him, Marty.
Yeah, it says the call drop.
Yeah, well, let's see if he'll call back in. You have his number.
Yeah.
One of the questions I was going to ask him was, what are some of the recommendations, and I'll present that to Tom. What are some of the specific recommendations do you have to resolve or correct the problem? We can always talk about the problem, but what we need is solutions as well.
Well, thank goodness that whistleblower rights we've done this so many times that we know how to fix this. It's just whether there's a matter of the political will. Police officers have to be protected whenever they communicate information about police illegality, you know, if it's going to sabotage a pending prosecution or something, there's always, some respect exceptions for reality. But the rule has to be that they have the free speech right to inform their bosses as part of their job duties or inform the public if their bosses don't care when the police break the law. That's right. The first cornerstone of protected speech. Really, the other key principle is that they have independent due process. There's lots of whistleblower laws that tell you, this is illegal to retaliate, and if you feel you're retaliated, you go to your employer and appeal it. And your employer is the one who's doing the retaliation. They're fraud.
Right.
They're bad jokes. They're false advertising. So the police officers have to have access to court to defend their integrity before a jury of citizens. If they have strong free speech rights and they have access to court to enforce them, to have a fair day in court, then they have to have fair burdens of proof, the legal rules of the game for how much evidence it takes to win, and remedies. If they win their case, that they really won't be worse off. a lot of whistleblower laws, you still lose by winning. Now, those are the four cornerstones. And we've done that. We've done that 16 times since the millennium for different sectors of the economy, different corporate employees. Almost the whole labor force in our country has those whistleblower rights, except state and local police officers.
Okay.
Right.
I want to remind everyone that Tom Devine and Matthew Fogg will be on with me Monday night for a full-length show where we're going to talk about all of this in depth. I want to thank you both for coming on and giving everybody kind of a preview of what we're going to be discussing. I anticipate a very large audience for that show, but thank you for giving us your time tonight.
Thanks for having us, Marty.
Thanks very much to the both of you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye, folks.
Hey, Tom, give me a call. Bye-bye.
Okay, Marty, we now have, hopefully we have Lisa Donnelly as well as Shannon Reed and possibly others to join us. Do you have them all locked in?
You've got Denise? Yes. Denise, Lisa, and Shannon are all on with you.
Okay, Lisa. We only have a half an hour, so what I want you to do is we want to have a conversation. So give us a kind of an update of what's been going on, and let's kind of have a discussion about that and fill in some of the gaps and have the other women to join in the conversation, because I know both Marty and I will have some questions for you, as well as the ladies that are joining you. And this is a situation that we want you to know that's been going on for decades after decades. So this is not new. So, Lisa, continue to update our listening public on this issue. Okay, Lisa, we're having a difficult time getting you in.
For me?
You're breaking up. Marty, can you hear me?
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Hello? You can hear me? I'm sorry. I had my Wi-Fi on my phone for some reason. So.
Okay.
So, yes, there's no good news. I'm hoping someday I can come on, Marty, and say, guess what, Marty? There's good news because something good happened in the Forest Service or USDA in terms of civil rights. But no, nothing's happened. And it just continues to get worse and worse. And abuses are worse than ever before. And Denise can tell you a little bit about what's recently happened to her, which is unbelievable. It's incredible. And I'm still getting a lot of calls from employees that, you know, I thought maybe the harassment would die down a little bit, considering everybody's work, you know, a lot of people are working at home. But no, the people are still being harassed. They're still being fired at an all-time high. And I have situations where I have a person that is really about to die because the agency fired him. He has a serious illness, and the agency didn't want a person with disability, so they changed his duties, made him and canceled his reasonable accommodation, canceled it, and then made him put in another reasonable accommodation and denied it, and then fired him because they said he couldn't do his job after they changed his duties. He'd been very successful before, and he has no insurance now. He can't go to a doctor's appointment. He's in extreme pain, and he recently emailed me and said, I think I'm about to die. Carry on my case because they shouldn't get away with this. Okay, that's what I just got from someone from the Forest Service. I think I'm going to die. Please carry on my case. That is what the Forest Service is doing to employees. And I've got situations, you know, we're at a situation now where we're, you know, talking a lot about Black Lives Matter. and we're seeing the protests, but I can tell you in the Forest Service, Black lives do not matter. I've got African-American employees that I represent that just trumped up on false charges and fired. Just being treated like, just horribly treated. And so, yeah, there needs to be some kind of recognition and change in the Forest Service to recognize that African-American employees matter, because they don't now. So that's a big issue going on right now. Violence against women. Denise will tell you about that with no accountability. As you remember, August of 2019, a group of the women, two of them right here with me, Shannon and Denise, met with the Forest Service Chief Vicki Christensen and her executive assistant Leslie Weldon. We spent 2 days in Sacramento presenting a plan and discussing ways to address the harassment and discrimination and retaliation against women and other employees. And we didn't hear about after that. We never heard back from them. There were agreements made in that meeting that they were going to get back to us on specific action items. Never did. They were going to get back to us and give us comments on the plan we presented. Never did. And so, I mean, this is the chief, all right? You wouldn't think the chief was going to lie to you, to your face, but she did. And so recently I sent an email to her and to the secretary and his staff explaining, you know, what went on and the agreements that were made and how we've never heard from them. And it was clearly smoke and mirrors. They never had any intention of working with us. So then her executive assistant, Leslie Weldon, emails a response and intentionally leaves me off of it and Denise. Purposely leaves us off. I wouldn't even known that there was a response if Shannon hadn't emailed it to me and let me know. So, and then it was just, you know, a list of all the things that they think they're doing that are going to make a difference, like task forces, and they've got these little pamphlets they're handing out and little films that they're showing, you know, and they're doing some kind of workshop to tell employees that women are great. I mean, it's just, you know, training and no accountability. There was nothing about accountability in there. So they're just continuing to do the smoke and mirrors, make it look like they're taking action to address the employee abuses and the sexual misconduct, and they're not. Just had another recent sexual misconduct case, young woman. You know, it just goes on and on, Marty. It's horrible. It's horrible. I got contacted from a law enforcement fire person that, you know, does both. And it's the treatment from supervisors that they just get away with just treating people like, you know, subhuman, like they're subhuman. It's just incredible. And so it's bad. And it's got to change. I'll let Denise and Shannon talk a little bit. I know Shannon's, you know, big issue is heart. In the email that Leslie Weldon sent back to us, she lied in it and said that heart was working and that they were doing certain things, and I have proof that they aren't. So more lies there. It's just, you know, there's just a list that you can go down of the things that they're doing and not doing that are just harming people on a daily basis. It's just sad. So we did, I think on a bright note, I can say that we did have a Zoom meeting with Senator Biden's staff. We're hoping to get, you know, some positive things out of that. I'll let Lawrence talk to you about that. I'll let Shannon talk to you about the heart and how it's not working still. And Denise can talk about violence against women and how it's accepted and encouraged in the Forest Service. So I think that's all I can say right now.
So who's up next? Will Denise, is Denise on, or is Shannon up? Who you recommend?
Denise, why don't you talk about what happened to you? Because this is incredible, and people need to know.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
So I have been, ever since, you know, I had working with Lisa, I started becoming an advocate for employees, and this employee had asked me to come be with them because they were in fear of getting disciplined. Well, to make a long story short, I notified my supervisor and my chain of command, and I went to their office, and from this, I was physically assaulted when I was sitting in a chair, to the point where I'm still recovering from surgery. It tore my rotator cuff and broke my AC joint, where they had to cut my collarbone apart. And so I had emailed, you know, my force supervisor, stating all these things, and they did a misconduct investigation against me, and I'm facing 30 days of suspension as a result. And all I did was go to try to support an employee during a misconduct, something regarding misconduct, and I was physically assaulted. I went to the police department. The agency interfered and went in and talked to the police, and OAG, you know, harassed me, you know, made threats towards me, and tried to talk me into dropping my case about this individual who is, you know, a manager, and I was the bad guy. I can't even make this story up. I mean, for some details, it's destroying my life. You know, this is, you know, a $42,000 surgery, and I couldn't even get workman's comp because, you know, first they agreed to pay for it, and then all of a sudden, no, they won't let me. They said no. When I told my supervisor, and it went up the chain, and nobody since October has come to me and asked me. The only thing that happened was a misconduct investigation against me. I was attacked, purposely attacked, assaulted. Several lies were made up against me, and not one person has come up to me and asked me what happened.
That's amazing. That's utterly amazing.
You know, it is utterly amazing. We should be surprised, though, but we're not. This is happening. Denise, you know, has been, you know, it's just like we've been talking whistleblower. Denise has been a whistleblower since 2011 when she first came out and reported sexual misconduct. Right, Denise? 2011.
Right. Right. When they were investigating me for my misconduct investigation, they had an armed police officer in the room the entire time I was there. And they had, and it was only when I was an armed police person, law enforcement. I've never been to jail in my life. I've never had anything against me. And they required an armed person in the room with me, as if I was going to do something.
Yeah, complete intimidation. And, you know, like I said, Denise has been doing this for 9 years. She's put up with a lot of retaliation. She was, you know, in the congressional hearing and testified. And at that time, Congressman Chaffetz and Congressman Cummings both gave their promise that she would not have to undergo any retaliation. And she has been continually retaliated against since she was in that hearing in 2018, and she's had to file EEO complaints. She's, you know, had to go to the police department. This is the Forest Service. This is the Forest Service today that we're talking about. The Forest Service that Vicki Christensen tells Congress and the media and OIG and whoever will listen to her that they are making changes to the working conditions and the culture of the Forest Service. And then you look at what's happening, Denise, and Denise is an example of what's happening to other employees. There's no change. It's getting worse. They're hiding behind programs that they're putting together. It's all smoke and mirrors. They are still angry at us, Marty, because we exposed Tony Took. It was us. We went to Dateline. We went to PBS. We are the ones that exposed Tony Took as a sexual predator with sexual misconduct, forced him to retire early because of it. It was broadcasted nationally. It was one of the most embarrassing things to happen to the Forest Service, and they are punishing Shannon, and they're punishing Denise, and they're punishing anyone else that's part of this working women's group because they blame us all.
Do you know, Lisa, I think I, you know, in an email I had stated to you, you know, when you had sent me what had that roster of all the programs they were setting up and everything else, what immediately struck me, and it always does, is this is a federal agency. Of all places, how could this possibly be happening there? And once it's known it is happening, why isn't it immediately cleaned up? The idea that this has gone on for years and years and years, that Denise and Shannon are retaliated against for speaking out and telling what's going on, and these people's response is to just get worse, to just do more. They're obviously not in any fear of losing their jobs. They obviously have no intention of changing their method of operation. And like I say, for this to be a federal agency, I mean, they should be setting the standard. And unfortunately, they am, and the bar is pretty low. Just absolutely
very low.
Is incredible to me. And we're funding all of this. We're funding every bit of it. One other thing that concerns me, and then I'm going to be quiet here, is, you know, here last year they came out with that bill that allowed federal agencies to start shredding and destroying even the Library of Congress, any documents or records that were older than 7 years old. And then as each year passes, you take another year and get rid of those documents. And so what they're doing is destroying evidence. So that on discovery, there is nothing there. And especially like with her case that goes back so far, they're destroying the evidence so that you can't find anything out. You can't prove with their own records. So my suggestion is, and I'm sure you've already done this, is to copy everything in the current URL on it, showing that that document did exist. But like I say, this is appalling, and we're funding every bit of this for them to do this to these women. That, to me, irks me more than anything. I'll be quiet now. I'm sorry.
I do have a question to follow up. Denise, did, when you reported to the local police authorities, did they take a record, and did you get a copy of what you filed?
So I made a statement. I went to the police department and made a statement, and they had an officer who went and talked to, you know, to the person who supposedly done this, you know, the incident, and they refused to give me any copy of anything. I still have no copy. The agency went in, the Forest Service went in, because it happened on federal property, took over the case. So pretty much told the police department that the federal government will take care of it.
Did you get?
So I couldn't even go to the police.
When you talk with the Office of Inspector General, was there any report or anything generated to show that you brought this issue to their attention, especially with the fact that they've done absolutely nothing? In fact, what you said is, if I understood you correctly, you've suffered added reprisal, and they were not any help. In fact, they were less than helpful.
they were intimidating me and trying to get me to drop my complaint against the manager who did this to me, repeatedly, like, bullying me and threatening me. And it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. It was a complete setup. It was meant to intimidate me and made to make me, run in fear.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
I have nothing.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
You know, even the agent, OIG agent, made horrible accusations about me in the final report for my disciplinary, because I wasn't. It was just awful.
Well, thank you. I'm sure that Lisa is working on that, and I think we need to probably have a discussion about that. In addition to, I think this should be one of the major cases that we should bring forward as an example as we move our issues and concerns to a higher level of the Biden campaign. So you may, hopefully, you will not feel alone. We're going to support you, and we're going to try to bring this to some attention of others, including a press reporter that I'm talking to who may be interested in covering what's going on with you. The other thing, we do have Shannon Reed on the phone, on the line. Shannon, can you do you have anything additional in terms of what you're going through? And if so, is it anything similar to any degree of what Denise Rice is suffering today?
Yes. I'm Shannon Reed, and I'm an air quality specialist, and I was wrongfully terminated from the Forest Service. And to be honest, I thought it was going to be all over once I was terminated. But no, about 2-3 weeks ago, I got a new job, and the Forest Service actually came to my house to intimidate me, to harass and intimidate me. And about a week later, I found that my garage door had been tampered with. And I have witnesses, and it's just been crazy. So I wish I could say that it was all over once I was fired, but it's not. They keep coming, and they don't stop. And I just don't understand why they don't stop, because they fired me almost 2 years ago, and I wish they just kind of let it go. So I'm trying to move on with my life. I spent the last 2 years without a job, without income, without health insurance, you know. So I went through the COVID thing without any insurance. And I basically have spent all my savings, all my retirement has gone to all of this stuff, and it's drained me dry. And it's crazy that it's still going on. So this is actually crazy that it's still going on.
Yeah. And that's what they want. You know, Marty, is they don't just want to discipline you. They don't just want to fire you. They want to destroy you. Okay. And clear back in the 1990s, when I was going through the same thing that, you know, Denise is going through and Shannon is still going through, even though she's been removed. They did the same thing. They want to destroy you. They want to initially scare you. And if you stand up to them and say, I'm not scared, then they want to discredit you. And if you're a stand-up employee and they can't really discredit you, they will trump things up and they will try to destroy you. That is the MO of the Forest Service, USDA Forest Service. That's how they treat or whistleblowers and or file complaints or report any type of civil rights violations or other violations. It's such a toxic, dysfunctional, corrupt agency that is being allowed to continue to harm employees. and nobody wants to step in and help. Nobody wants to step in and help at any entity, really, whether it's, you know, Congress. We've been to them so many times, and they haven't done anything. You know, we've been to the White House, not the current White House, because that would just be insane to go to a sexual predator and ask for help. But, you know, we've been to the White House in the past. The last time the White House helped us was during the Clinton administration. That's how long it's been.
Wow.
So there's no entity out there that cares that women are being raped and intimidated and having their, you know, rotator cuff and collarbones fractured. No, nobody cares. Just keep doing it.
Wow.
That's what I say.
So
it stuns me that this goes on in a federal agency. And, you know, the thing is, this isn't even like one of those buried secrets. This is well known. You know, thanks to you girls speaking out, this is well known that this goes on. And yet we've got Congress sits there and does nothing. The president does nothing, and not just this president or Congress, but the ones before them. Why would
Marty,
they tolerate this? Yeah.
It's so bad, Marty, that we've had 20 permanent firefighters quit this year.
Oh, my
God.
From
my forest. Just from my forest. 20
wow.
permanent. And that's just in fire. I mean, that's how bad it is.
Well, and why did they leave, just in general? What was...
The treatment of employees is unbearable.
Treatment
is
of
unbelievable.
Employees. Treatment at Christmas. This is
and
it's
by treatment. Yeah, by treatment, it can be anything from being sexually harassed. It could be, you know, we're talking male and female, really. It could be, you know, not being given opportunities to, you know, move forward in your career. Watching,
right.
you know, the fair-haired children get all the opportunities while you sit there and get nothing. It could be, you know, harassment, intimidation, name-calling.
Right.
You know,
actually putting
disciplinary
people's
actions.
Lives at risk.
Yeah, and with fire, putting
yeah.
people's
yeah. putting
lives
people's,
at risk.
Yeah. And they don't do anything about it. I mean, $7 million
right.
and potentially killing, you know, hundreds of firefighters, and nobody's held accountable. It's pushed under the rug, not even brought up.
Yeah, Denise has whistleblown
really,
on some of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's another thing, that the idea that, like I say, this is known inside government, in Congress, they this is well known to them, and why they don't correct this. And I remember watching that hearing you had with Cummins and Chavez. And I really thought behind that hearing, I thought, well, you got two bulldogs in there behind you. Something's about to happen
yeah.
here. And it did. Chavez
too.
Left, and then Mr. Cummins passed away. But in the interim, nothing happened. Nothing. I
no.
was just stunned by that, because I really thought those two were going to go to bat for you. I really did.
Yeah.
Especially when Chavez said to that, whatever that woman's name was, from USDA, that and he said, I don't believe a word you're saying. You know, I thought,
yeah.
ooh, here we go. Now we got it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she got promoted. She got promoted after that hearing.
I'm so surprised.
that was
yeah.
Lago.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. That
Denise,
was her name,
Denise Lago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah,
she got
yeah.
promoted right shortly thereafter.
Yes. Good Lord. And whatever
yeah.
happened to the fellow that was with her? The black gentleman, the he was like
the
deputy
assistant secretary.
Yeah.
yeah, yeah, assistant secretary. He left because the new administration came in, and there still is no assistant. There's still no assistant secretary since that time. It's
yeah.
through
wow.
over 3 years. There's been no assistant secretary.
Yeah, his name was Dr. Joe Leonard.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Director, Assistant Secretary of Civil Rights under the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And they haven't seen a need to have. They have not seen a need at USDA to have an actual Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights. As we've said numerous times, the USDA Office of Civil Rights is just
corrupt and dysfunctional in itself.
Well, isn't Trump trying to shut that office down? Didn't I read where he wants to shut that down? That was here a while back. And I know we've got 18 inspector general's offices sitting empty now that he's emptied out. And but if I remember correctly, and I'll look into that, Lisa and Shannon and Denise, and let you know what it, because maybe I'm remembering it incorrectly, but it seems to me he was trying to shut down the civil rights offices. And,
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And at the time, I was shocked. I remember when I read it, I thought, I find myself angry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I would support dismantling, you know, shutting down, dismantling the offices of civil rights if we could come back in and restructure them to where they were actually functional. But I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No. And the thing is, like they said about, you know, it's the truth. And they you know, the idea that this office should even have to exist, I just find that appalling, that it should even have to exist, that the problems are so severe that you have to create an office to deal with it. And yet it's still going on.
Well, Marty, my recommendation to cure the civil rights problem is, one, taking it to another level. We went to Senator Warren, and she listened to our group of farmers and employees talking about the systemic discrimination, racism, sexual abuse, and everything by a government agency, which is the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And she took on and came up with a plan which is very similar to what I've been talking about for over 20 years now, and that is virtually put the Office of Civil Rights at USDA in receivership, meaning in some way, shape, or form, take it over, dissolve the present structure, and reinvent that office and put people that are qualified, that are committed, that understand and are willing to commit to this whole issue of accountability, like we're asking of our police departments. Why can't we have an Office of Civil Rights which control the destiny of so many people and seeing the lives of so many people destroyed? We have a right to make sure that people's lives are not destroyed by government officials. And that is what we are attempting to continue to do as we move forward with the Biden administration. We are hoping that the Biden administration adopts the Warren plan as a start. So I think they need to be totally turned upside down and inside out and start all over. And the idea that this can't be done because it's a government agency is ridiculous and frivolous, is the way I see it, when people tell me it can't be done. They just don't want to do it. And the people that have oversight and control and knowledge of this, they have simply stepped backwards instead of moving forward to correct all these problems of the racism, sexism at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I think that is one of the solutions.
Yes, I agree. I mean, that's a great solution.
Yes.
We're hoping that that Senator Biden will adopt the Warren plan and move forward with us on making those changes.
Okay. Well, we need to kind of wrap this up here. Girls, I want to thank you all for coming back on again, and keep us posted. You know, if you need airtime, let me and Lawrence know. We'll get you hooked up. There's anything we can do to help you, anything at all, just give us a heads up. I wish
Thank
I could
you, Marty.
Save you all from this, but oh, good Lord.
But I would like,
I don't
one
know.
Thing I'd like to ask Marty.
Yes.
I have a few men. I know we usually have women employees on. I have a few
yes.
men who have asked me to come on and give a perspective of
yes.
the treatment against them. And
yes.
I thought that might be a good idea. That might be, you know, something different for us to hear.
And it would give
about
some,
how
yes, and I think it would expose
yeah.
the fact that it isn't just the women who are subjected
right.
to this, because, you know, they tend to try to box you in with that. Well, it's, you know, it's
yes.
a bunch of hysterical women. I think this would be excellent. Yes, most definitely. We'd love to put them on and
okay.
Okay. hear their
we can
stories.
Talk about that.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Sounds good. Lawrence, you got anything okay. you want to add here? She's not talking. Okay. Well, girls, I guess. Yeah, well, he's still on there.
Yeah, I
want
to just say thank you to all
I'd
like to say thank you to all of our guests tonight, and we're going to continue to drive home our issues and concerns until we bring positive resolution. And the situation with Denise, and I think that's something that's worthy of further discussion, and
yes.
I think Lisa, you and I need to talk about that. So I thank
yes.
you all very much.
Okay.
And like I say,
thank you, Marty.
You bet. If you need any more time, just let me know.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. Oh, please, honey. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Marty.
Yes, thank you so much.
We'll be back, of course, next week doing all kinds of stuff, so you're just going to have to tune in and see what it is, because we're booked up solid clear through August. So just let me know, you know, what you need, and I'll get you hooked up on that. And, again, these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, taking place July 28th through the 31st, and it will be on video this year, which should give it tons more exposure. I think that's a great idea. Hopefully they'll carry that forward in following years. And I still think we should all meet out there, because it's a wonderful place to network, meet other people that are whistleblowing, and find out what works, what didn't, their progress, so on. But anyway, thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and all you callers who tuned in from the D.C. area. Thank you. We appreciate it. We truly do. But sometime, try calling in instead of lurking on the line. We'd love to talk to you. Anyway, everybody have a good evening. Girls, thank you. Lawrence, as always, thank you for co-hosting with me.
You too, Marty. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you, and
good night.
Good night,
everyone.
Bye-bye.